Benjamin Netanyahu is someone to be admired and even emulated. Some of the most important news in the world right now is happening in Lithuania, and prayer is an important, essential daily activity. These are three controversial takes from our latest Trumpet Print Edition magazine that we're going to look at on today's Trumpet World. Israel's Rising Lion is the cover of our latest Trumpet Print magazine. And sadly, I think that's one of our most controversial covers for a while. The fact that it is controversial, I think, shows how much society has declined. But it's also a cover that feels bang up to date. We're having this Trumpet review session a little bit later than usual with a busy summer over at our headquarters campus. But the big news this morning as we record this is that Israel might occupy Gaza. So this still feels bang up to date. That decision is going to cause outrage throughout the world if Israel does indeed go ahead with that. But it looks like that's what Israel needs to be safe, to stop another October 7th style massacre. And so despite what the entire rest of the world thinks, Benjamin Netanyahu seems set to go ahead with that. So today I'm joined by the Trumpet Assistant Managing Editor, Philip Nice, to discuss this latest issue. Philip, thanks so much for joining me. And perhaps you could begin with your thoughts on this cover article, Israel's Rising Lion.
Well, thanks. It's good to be with you, Richard. I had just some of the same thoughts that you were talking about. We were reading the news this morning and just seeing how Benjamin Netanyahu and his boldness is in the headlines. As you said, this might or might not happen. These are leaks that that are attributing this plan to him, but they might be true. But the fact that we're recording this a little bit later probably made you and me both think of that this cover and this cover story being feeling at least a little bit dated. But at the Trumpet, we have this tendency of being up to date even without intending to be sometimes. We always intend to be, but the editor in chief, Gerald Fleury, his focus on Netanyahu has really intensified, I'd say, over recent weeks and months, as has his perspective on Churchill, Winston Churchill, and comparing the two. So Mr. Fleury's been really getting deeply into Winston Churchill, and not for the first time, as you and I know. He's been really focused on that historic example and even the prophecies in the Bible that relate to Winston Churchill. And he's really staying on the importance of and the role of Benjamin Netanyahu and kind of in relation to that. And this article, especially coming out at this time, really, to me, helped in bring some clarity to the situation where we had a direct war between Israel and Iran, pretty much a direct strike from Israel on Iran. That was in the context of Israel already taking bold actions against Hezbollah, obviously against Hamas, and just understanding how that fit in with other Bible prophecies about Israel's decline was really just, this is just a real, I don't know, anchor point for understanding where we are at this specific time in Bible prophecy and in Israel's history. So this was a really, I think, important article. Mr. Fleury really seems to feel that it's a very important one, and just keeps coming back to that metaphor, the Lion of Judah. And you know, for our viewers that don't already know, most of them probably do, but Israel, you know, the state of Israel in the Middle East, that is the Jewish state, that's the Jewish nation, that comes from the word Judah. And when you start to put those things together, you start to realize that the Jewish people are in the Bible, and they're still active today, and there's still things in the Bible that are applying to previous administrations, to the Netanyahu administration. Then That in itself is a clue as to how alive the Bible is generally, and that there are other tribes in the Bible, and that there are prophecies about those tribes, and those are active in the world around us as well.
You mentioned this is something Mr. Flow is focused on more recently, which is absolutely true, but it's also something, I mean, Benjamin Netanyahu, he has talked about him for years.
Mr. Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister of the Jewish nation in the Middle East, came to America's Congress and spoke before them about Iran's quest for the nuclear bomb. Now, he talked a lot about the survival of his country. That's what he's concerned about. And he gave a speech that was really heard around the world. There were many people that hated that speech. There were others that even more, as I understand it, loved that speech. But it was heard by many, many people around the world, and it was much far above politics, in my estimation, because it was primarily about the number one problem facing humanity today, and that is the problem of human survival. It was about that subject, and it fulfilled Bible prophecy. Bibi Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel, came to America, and he spoke about something that I think Congress was not expecting. He talked quite a bit about the book of Esther in the Bible, the book that a lot of people don't know very much about. Never has the United Nations or the UN been so fiercely disunited as it has been in the last few years. Recently, the prime minister of the Jewish state, Benjamin Netanyahu, spoke before the United Nations and talked about the horror of nuclear weapons and how they were being proliferated around the world. And in that speech, though, something really shocking and unusual was he gave what we could say is a hint or a clue to how the nations could be united and how the world could be brought and given world peace, whether it be individuals or families or nations or whatever. But Mr. Netanyahu actually discussed Bible prophecy. He discussed Bible prophecy and even said that Bible prophecy is being fulfilled or realized in our time. The Jews have been praying for peace for thousands of years, but they've never had real peace. And Mr. Netanyahu talked about hope for all the children of Abraham. That's the son Isaac and the son Ishmael. The Arabs descend from that man. Mr. Netanyahu even mentioned a psalm where he said, "May God bless his people with peace." Well, yes, may God bless his people with peace. But are we going to God for that peace? Mr. Netanyahu is surely one of the outstanding leaders of the world. I look forward to working with you. And how much does he know about fighting wars? He's been doing it most of his life in Israel or Judah. That's just the truth.
And I remember we were kind of supplying some research for this article and going back over some of what Mr. Flurry had said. And you know, one of the individuals doing a lot of that research was kind of like, well, there's enough material here for a booklet. Like, and I think it's a very, this is a very unique take where Mr. Flurry says, "I was stirred by Netanyahu's action and his bold, aggressive leadership. In many ways, he is his nation's rising lion. What Israel did to neutralize Iran teaches all mankind powerful lessons about what it takes to overcome evil. And it is a specific reminder to those God has called to back his watchman work in the dangerous end time. To achieve what God wants us to, we all need the spirit of a rising lion." And like you say, it ties right back into the Lion of Judah. But I mean, you're never going to get a news magazine that kind of talks about the Bible and brings Bible prophecy into it. But then a news magazine that looks at, well, hey, here's how Benjamin Netanyahu took care of Iran. One of the big takeaways from that is that's how you need to treat evil. That's how you need to go to war against things in your life that you need to overcome. And the fact that Benjamin Netanyahu is now a controversial figure, like, that is a sign of sickness and of weakness, and that we have a broken will, and that we fundamentally, well, we don't understand evil, but even that stems from a broken will. We don't want to confront evil. Confronting evil is hard, and we do not want to do hard things, and so we make excuses to not confront evil. It would be immoral, it would be counterproductive, and we come up with all kinds of reasons not to act. And you know, there's evil that does just need to be confronted. And I think also, I mean, as Mr. Flory kind of touches on as well here, there's a lot of anti-Semitism in that, like, Hamas are as evil as the Nazis, yet we get outraged if Israel were to even consider doing some things that Britain and America did against the Nazis for the same reasons, to keep ourselves safe. It's fine for our forefathers to do those things. It's not fine in some people's eyes for Israel to do those identical things. And I think anti-Semitism is at the root of that double standard. But just that taking the news and then having a very practical, personal lesson from it, I think is very unique about this piece.
Right. I agree with that. And I think that, we were talking about how the anti-Semitism has really revealed itself for what it is in this whole context. I mean, the division within Israel is one thing, but this just constant and illogical and largely inhuman bias, to use a mild word, against Israel is really just out there, plain to see at this point. This is in the context. These are direct ramifications of October 7th. This is in recent memory, this blood stain on the face of the earth. I mean, when I just get this mental image of the earth being stained, but mankind was stained by what some men did on October 7th. That's in recent memory. It's extra carnage and extra horrific, and you know, the rapes and the, like, you, even if you're not looking for that type of thing, I mean, it finds you. We know what happened on October 7th. We know what Benjamin Netanyahu is trying to limit and eradicate, and still the world are attacking and accusing the Israelis and Netanyahu of being more like the Nazis than Hamas, which they were walking down the street with RPGs shooting them into cars of people. Like, they were burning people alive. They were gang raping women because they were Jewish. And a lot of them weren't even Jewish. They were just around the Jewish communities. And they did that. And this is the direct trigger of the war in Gaza and the, you know, conflict with Iran, not as directly, but and the world is finding ways to excuse and side with the people who want to exterminate Jews at this time, not when that's like faded from memory, but when that's right in recent memory. And so that's another way in which Netanyahu has had lion-like courage. And we've not seen that in other Israeli leaders. There have been ones who have, you know, led wars and so forth, but Netanyahu's consistently been strong, been willing to fight, been willing to risk what his own people and opposition parties might do to him, or, you know, who knows what could happen inside of Israel. And yet he's standing alone.
And in that standing alone, you know, that connection Mr. Flory makes between Netanyahu and Winston Churchill, men who both stood alone against evil and weren't deterred by vast opposition criticizing them, calling them warmongers, telling them that they were wrong. And he draws a profound point here in that article too, where Mr. Flurry points to Ezekiel chapter 33, which is a passage that talks about a watchman, the need for a watchman. It begins by talking about the people appointing a watchman, and Mr. Flurry talks about, well, Winston Churchill was a watchman the people appointed. But then he says, look at the state of Israel today, and it's clear that Benjamin Netanyahu is fulfilling that role in the Jewish state. You know, he's giving the roar, that's in the context of giving the roar of a lion. He says, that man has saved his nation several times. He is an impressive example. He is one of the few leaders left in Israel with this lion-like quality. That is what it takes to be a watchman. And so he talks about that, but then talks about this change in Ezekiel 33, where you start to get into verse 7, and it starts talking about, instead of the people choosing a watchman, God chooses a watchman. God says, so you, son of man, I have set you as a watchman unto the house of Israel. Therefore, you shall hear the word at my mouth and warn them from me. And Mr. Flurry says there, the success that Israel has had with the Operation Rising Lion is going to give way to the end of the watchman work of a man chosen by the people. Then there will be only one watchman message left, that of God's watchman, before the worst suffering ever on earth. And it's very clear. Ezekiel 33 says God is going to appoint one watchman, not watchman plural and not a watch committee. There is one man that God is working with. And then it ties back into this rising lion. There is a man that gets a warning out, and the chapter ends with a group of people that listen to the message, that enjoy the message, that hear the words, but don't do them, but don't take action based on the watchman warning. Why? Because taking action is hard. And taking action requires that spirit of the rising lion. And we lack that spirit. But as Mr. Flurry concludes there, the final subhead in the article is, you need the lion. And it's not about working up the spirit of the rising lion within ourselves. I mean, as Mr. Flurry wrote in a different booklet, we're all cowards. And we're all cowardly when it comes to, especially when it comes to confronting our problems, and we don't want to do that. And I think many of, you know, we all have kind of a history of, yeah, I tried to confront this. I tried to improve on this. This was a sin. I needed to change. And I tried and I failed. And I didn't manage to change that. But the solution is the Lion of Judah. That ultimately, you know, Jesus Christ is that rising lion. Mr. Flurry says that watchman and his supporters need much more lion-like boldness than Benjamin Netanyahu has. He says later, God clearly says we must have the character, the strength, the boldness of the lion of the tribe of Judah. Our leader is the lion of the tribe of Judah. He is strong. He is fearless. And this lion must live within us. That's where we get that courage to act. And sure, maybe we've tried and failed to act and tried and failed to do things before. But if that was based on our own strength and power, that doesn't matter. Like, the solution is you have Jesus Christ, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, living in you, and then you can overcome those things. It's still hard. It still takes perseverance, but God can do anything. God can overcome that. And Mr. Flurry concludes, to qualify for that role, we must build that lion-like leadership today. You don't naturally become a leader. You must pray, plan, and work to build leadership, and you must follow the Lion of the tribe of Judah. And there's a lot of people that this goes out to, and that know that there are things that they want to do, that they need to do more to support this watchman work. And they know as well that there are tremendous blessings that God promises for supporting this work. And yet it's still hard to do it. It's hard to rise up like a lion. And if that's you, well, you know, this article points to the solution. And it's to go to God, and it's to go to God for that spirit of the rising lion, of a divine rather than human spirit of the rising lion, and that can overcome any and all evil.
Right, a lesson we can learn from Netanyahu and Israel, and from Churchill and Britain, is something that we can do in our own lives, and that's to regard smoothness and softness and tolerance and compromise as a warning sign, not, like We desire comfort, and you know, we don't want our routines disrupted. We don't want our nations at war, certainly unnecessarily, of course. But Churchill, Netanyahu, and to a much deeper degree, and in a much more powerful and personal way, you know, Mr. Fleury as a watchman, recognize the dangers of complacency and appeasement and compromise and status quo, and whether, and they're, that's on the national level, but that's also true on the personal level. That's how it gets to the national level, is we are appeasing and compromising and tolerant of evil in our lives. If you are standing alone, if you are fighting, if you're up against all odds, if it's uncomfortable and you don't want to do it, but you're doing it, that's a good indication that you're doing what's right. You're doing it not because of your own, you know, motivation, your own sense of what's right and what's just and so forth, but what you know is right from the source of what's right, which would be God, which would be the book. The Jews, I think, are called the people of the book sometimes. If you're taking that, if you're coming under that at what's been taught in the Bible as what's right, what's just, then you will be you will find yourself standing alone. You will find yourself doing things uncomfortably or that are uncomfortable. You will find yourself choosing to stand up instead of to sit back, to fight instead of appease and tolerate your way through life. And so that is a powerful lesson from this article.
Well, talking of that lesson about appeasement, compromise, as impressive as that spirit of a rising lion was, Benjamin Netanyahu dealt Iran a major blow. Donald Trump, President Trump, dealt Iran a major blow. But the Iranian regime is still in power. Like, I remember the big pressure in writing this, the huge challenge in writing this trumpet issue was like, it was changing day to day. I don't think, I mean, obviously it was only a week or a couple of weeks, I think, before this went to print that even the attack first started. And we were kind of like, are we going to have to send this off to press halfway through the war? I mean, the war kind of fitted in perfectly with our print schedules, I think, finishing a day or two before it went off to press. And we were able to once again greatly stress the editors and the graphics guys by giving them lots of last minute changes, but have it complete, have the war complete. And the article that came of that from managing editor Joel Hillico is Iran's regime finished? That looks like, okay, well, what is next for Iran? And even with the war over, the dust hadn't settled. And there was talk of, are we going to see, say, a pro-Shah movement in Iran? There was talk of a popular uprising, of regime change. That's not happened in the month or so since then. And you know, this article makes a bold but very solidly biblical prediction that Iran is not down and out, that Bible prophecy did foretell a major change in direction for Iran. There's specific prophecies, and they don't talk about Iran controlling Syria and Lebanon and kind of this North Levant area. They talk about it controlling Egypt and North Africa and the Suez Canal and the Red Sea area. So the Bible prophecy did prophesy a change in direction, but that Iran will remain the same pushy state that they always have been.
This article is really to me, I had a big question mark, and this helped answer that question mark. That what does Bible prophecy say? How does what we're seeing fit with what has been prophesied for decades at this point? And again, this, I believe we're sending another updated King of the South book by Mr. Fleury to the printer this week or hereabouts. And this is a prophecy that Mr. Fleury specifically has identified as applying to Iran. Iran is the King of the South, the power that leads the King of the South, which is radical Islam. That's something that he identified almost as I mean, 30 years ago, and has consistently stuck with. And then you see the United States and Israel, you know, Israel, he, Mr. Foley himself, acknowledging Israel rising like a lion under a Winston Churchill type leader, striking Iran directly, the U.S. standing shoulder to shoulder with Israel for at least 24 hours or so to use its most, you know, to use its one of the biggest symbols of its superpower strength to directly attack the King of the South. And so we are all very interested to see what, you know, Mr. Fleury and you know, says about this, and what how the Bible's prophecies apply to something we haven't seen very much of, which is the descendants of ancient Israel, the United States, Israel, acting with strength, acting with military strength, using their superior military to directly strike an evil regime. And I mean, it puts yourself back in those days of that days long war. And it was, remember, everybody was saying, I wonder how far this is going to go. I mean, the Israelis, the Americans, they can basically destroy, if not the regime, the top leaders of the regime at will. Like he's huddled in a hole somewhere, you know, and holes don't really protect against Israeli bunker busters, against American bunker busters sometimes. So, I mean, it was just a very fast moving situation. It was amazing to see what the Israelis and the Americans could do. I mean, the Israelis had, turns out they had been like hiding out right next to Iranian anti-aircraft installations. And when the time was right, all in a very coordinated manner, they used, I think it was drones and different, I think it was mainly drones to just destroy the anti-aircraft units as soon as they rolled out, as soon as they peeked their heads. And then it was just a lightning strikes of success for Israel. And then America, you know, kind of came in on the backs of what the Israelis did. And so it was just easy to say, I mean, people were saying, hey, it's kind of 50-50. If the Ayatollah gets assassinated, he's, you know, very elderly as it is, you know, America might just go ahead and take out that regime completely, or try to. But I mean, the trumpet and Mr. Fleury, the King of the South, revelation just focused on that. So one way or the other, that regime of radical Islamic terroristic, regionally and globally ambitious Islamists will remain. And this will, as you said, even things will change from what they are. Iran will even, you know, lose some power compared to, you know, what it had in Syria and so forth. But it will lead toward the arrangement of nations, the block of nations that you were just describing there. So, you know, Bible prophecy almost didn't even notice the 12-day war. I think it's they strived to name it the 12-day war even before it was totally over. But it's almost like Bible prophecy just it was just a blip on the radar. But it did not seem like a blip at the time.
And as this article says, well, it says, watch what will happen. In the end, the way America handles Iran will be a powerful lesson in the dangers of failing to deal completely with evil, which just gets back to everything you were saying. But along those lines, also as a sidebar to this article, there's Trumpet interview dealing with the devil, which is an interview from our sister show, The Trumpet Daily, also available now on YouTube. I've had a few people leave comments, which I've tried to respond to, but the same people have left comments in later videos. So maybe something didn't work or they didn't see them, asking where the Trumpet Daily is on YouTube. They are back on YouTube. They have their own Trumpet Daily channel now, so you can go and find and subscribe to them on YouTube as well as on Rumble. But this is a write-up of some of the highlights between Trumpet executive editor Stephen Fleury and Melanie Phillips, you know, an excellent journalist writing on Israel, and just she talks about the danger of the pressure that America puts on Israel to drag its feet, to hold back, and how harmful that is. It's a really interesting interview, and it's again, you've got the highlights of that in that trumpet print article. And then, I mean, the other point, you can summarize this article pretty thoroughly, but the other point that it makes in the conclusion as well is, Mr. Hilliker writes, prophecy shows that the recent offensive against Iran will fail to eliminate the threat. It also shows that this failure will serve as a potent example to another power on how to attack Iran and succeed. And, you know, maybe not the kind of the spiritual lesson about the dangers of partially dealing with evil, but a lesson about partially dealing with an enemy is learned. But it's learned by this European king of the north. And I think they've probably seen something similar in Russia and Ukraine. You know, not that Ukraine is kind of an equivalent to Iran by any extent, but as an opponent, Russia underestimated the amount of force that would be needed to conquer Ukraine and ended up getting bogged down in a long war. Whereas if they'd have gone in a lot harder on day one, they would have probably have won that pretty quickly. So it says, when this king of the north comes against Iran, it will not make the same mistake Israel and America did, deploying targeted strikes and strategic assassinations. No, and then he quotes the Bible, at the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him, but the king of the north shall rush upon him like a whirlwind with chariots and horsemen and many ships. That's from Daniel 11, verse 40 in the English Standard Version. And Mr. Hilliker concludes, God is warning us in advance. We must see his hand in these events as they unfold and use that as motivation to turn to him. Back to that point about use that as the motivation to get the help of that rising lion, of the Lion of Judah. He is alive and active today. He is guiding world events to fulfill his prophecies, and soon he will intervene to effect regime change, not just in a single oppressed Middle Eastern nation, but in every country in the earth. He will replace misguided, corrupt governments of this world with truly righteous rule. Only then will be the peace that America's president yearns for truly be established. So, a powerful and again, practical conclusion to that article on Israel's attack on Iran.
I think another practical thing to take from this is not just that Mr. Flurry says Bible prophecy is real, it's unbreakable. Not only that he says that it applies to events that are happening today, but he says that the Bible identification of this equals this today. The Bible identification of this equals this. I mean, you're reading in the Bible, you're reading about Egypt and Libyans and Cushites and the tribe of Judah and things. And there are different people. Very few churches will talk about prophecy. Even though Jesus Christ was a prophet, even though there's prophecy all through the Old Testament and the New Testament, some will, and they'll identify, or just individuals will identify the King of the South in other ways. This identification of the King of the South is very specific. It's very clear. And you need to look at this and say, is this borne out by events? Even when, you know, events zig and zag, is this identification, this book, if you order it, of the King of the South, applying this modern nation to these biblical names, using this reasoning, is that true? And if it is, you have, when you are holding in your hands the King of the South, or when you're holding in your hands a trumpet issue, you're holding something very, very, very unique, not just something that acknowledges that prophecy is real, that God is real, but something that is correctly identifying those Bible prophecy entities, nations, then that's, what else in the world is like that?
Yeah, great point. And you mentioned that Iran, King of the South, or that King of the South booklet. There is another short article, Iran is the King of the South, by Mihailo Zekig in this section, which again, I think you've summarize that already. But I mean, that does highlight how much evidence there is already. I mean, if we're going to take a scientific approach to Bible prophecy, which, not a phrase you'd hear very often, but in a sense is completely valid. The Bible says judge by the fruits. So, the early 90s, Mr. Flurry made a set of prediction based on Bible prophecy, based on these prophecies about the king of the south and Iran, and all of the indications the Bible gives that Iran fulfills this role of the king of the south. And this article goes through and shows how those prophecies have been fulfilled, how much of this has already been proven correct. And you know, we haven't had that absolute knockout punch that comes from the king of the north and completely takes out the king of the south yet. But so many of the other details that we're given there, we see have happened, or we see how they're on a path to happening exactly the way the Bible describes. And just as Mr. Hilliker concluded there, I mean, it's powerful proof of God's actions in the world. But maybe we'll move to the next article in there, A Prelude to the Weapons of World War III. And perhaps I'll just hop straight to you for your thoughts on this. This was one that Joshua came onto the show and talked about. We had a whole show about this, where you see Ukraine had their audacious drone attacks against Russia. You now saw the kind of audacious attacks that Israel had against Iran. We're seeing the way that some of these new weapons and new technologies that have been developed over the last few years have fundamentally altered warfare. And it's a fascinating look, I think, just generally at how warfare is changing. But then what Joshua does in this article is show how these changes all tie right in with Bible prophecy as well.
It is surprising how much the Bible gets into some of the specifics of the conflicts that are coming. It identifies the nations and it takes a revelation to understand what those nations are today. It identifies individuals, which we've often talked about, the king of the Prince of Rosh being a good example of that, but even a singular figure over Europe. And then certain specific figures we were just talking about, you know, Winston Churchill being a watchman figure actually mentioned in Ezekiel, identified by Mr. Flurry as, you know, the watchman the people chose from their coasts. So the Bible is surprisingly specific, and then it does have these specific passages, descriptions of what the warfare in the future will be like. And the big one I think that Mr. Flurry has just repeatedly come back to is the nuclear weapons. He very often talks about how nuclear weapons, different, you know, couldn't even be imagined in the time of the Bible, and yet they were being written about in the time of the Bible. There's many other weapons of mass destruction as well that could also, you know, almost certainly will be used in. You know, once people start launching nuclear weapons, then a lot of those other ones will be used as well. But the change of war, even before and in the absence of nuclear exchanges, is what this article kind of talks more about. It talks about the drones and so forth. I mean, he quotes Mr. Flurry saying future wars will most certainly include nuclear bombs and biological weapons. But Josue is talking about the state of things right now and the how drones in particular can change the war, the face of war, and what you can do and can't do, and what functions as a deterrent and what does not, what no longer functions as a deterrent. If the enemy has some drones, then your conventional anti-aircraft systems are not as effective as you thought they were, Iran. And then, you know, like in that case, I mean, this is kind of outside the scope of the article, but, you know, it was about infiltrating became more important than long range, right? And that we have the same thing with Ukraine and Russia, where if you successfully infiltrate, then using these, you know, inexpensive, by comparison, but advanced weapons like drones becomes, as they say, a game changer. And you add that he's really, I mean, every time I talk with him, it seems like he's talking about AI. And the more that gets integrated with just very high, very advanced computerization, very advanced networking, very advanced computer technology, the more those things can fly like a swarm of locusts, right? I mean, just if you've ever seen a flock of birds, a murmuration, I think it's called, or a cloud, absolute cloud of locusts, or even like a school of fish in the sea, and you see them all moving as a unit, and then you imagine, what if that was, well, in the case of locusts, it is destructive, but what if that had firepower, like actual firepower? That's what these drone swarms and these locusts and things seem to evoke in the Bible. So anyway, he really then focuses, in being German as he is, on Germany's role and its advancements. I mean, the U.S. has huge defense firms. As I understand it, we're developing ships to accompany carrier strike fleets that literally manufacture drones. Well, they don't just launch drones, they make them on an ongoing basis. Those haven't been built yet, but I think that's the plan. So anyway, this is not to say that other countries, particularly the United States, aren't making advancements, and this is something that you need the Bible, you need Revelation to guide you. What Germany is doing is going to prove to be important. These weapons are going to be used. Germany, as we always said, talk about Churchill saying it's fertile with military surprises. Like they will have the will to use these weapons. So, when you're talking about the Helsing HX2 and so forth, it's not that it's the only one out there. It's not that it's necessarily the biggest company, although Rheinmetall is getting to be one of the absolute giants of the earth in making weapons. It is to say that Bible prophecy and Revelation show that Germany and what Germany is doing will be used, will be used effectively and very, very, very destructively.
And your point about infiltration, I find that fascinating. And you're right, Joshua ties this into so many different specific prophecies. And I just find, tactics are the same throughout warfare. Like, surprise attack is not a new modern invention, but different tactics work better in different eras. The invention of the rifle and then the machine gun made kind of defensive fortifications very, very difficult to assault, which massively impacted the U.S. Civil War, World War I. Then you get more of a war of maneuver in World War II as you start to have machines that can break through that. Yeah, I think it is interesting that infiltration and surprise were a key feature of both of those attacks. And they show the potential for a surprise attack. And in a world where you do have all kinds of anti-aerial defenses and anti-missile defenses, like the value of a surprise attack that takes those out on day one is immense. And therefore, the incentive to do something like that is immense. And I think you think about, who's got all of that kind of technology? So much of that is in the United States. And yet also, who's got an incredibly porous border and just a huge border? And you look at, say, Israel setting up drone factories within Iran, how much easier would it be for China to set up drone factories within the United States? I mean, they own entire factories. They've been buying up farmland next to US bases for years, and that's like a well-known thing. There've been, just even in the last few months, you've had hidden aerials discovered in infrastructure for the American power grid that have been bought from China that allow China these devices to have an independent outlet to be controlled by China and an independent connection to receive signals and act on them and shut things down. America is incredibly vulnerable to something like that. And that is kind of almost the consequences of that are so big that it's unimaginable. And we don't really think about it. And I think therefore we kind of feel secure. But that is right in line with exactly the type of attack that the Bible talks about. The trumpet blows and no one goes to battle. These people that you thought were your allies and your lovers, they suddenly turn on you. And just even the very nature of warfare favors the kind of attacks the Bible talks about.
I think that Americans and British and people who might tend to trust in their society and their military should take warning from an article like this, from the Bible, you know, and from what you were just saying. We have a lot of weapons. We have a strong military. We have what we think is a strong economy, but imagine if people start getting, if these weapons start to be used, if people start being blinded, you know, the internet's out, the electrical grid's out, the, you know, whatever happens. I mean, the society that we have falls apart if, you know, it just, if some people in Congress whip up a controversy over some, you know, traffic stop in some state, you know, like we have riots, like if a foreign adversary intentionally and more full scale uses that, our society will fall apart. You know, Iran's society could fall apart and the regime wouldn't care too much. It would continue to war. If American society, British society, you know, fell apart, you know, it's hard to imagine what, just how fast it would change, and just how fast like our personal individual lives and communities would change. And this is, you know, this is a reminder that foreign adversaries are watching. They might seem to be your lovers, as you say, as the Bible describes it, but if trust the Bible over what you feel like in the comfort of your own home.
Well, that point about foreign adversaries seeming like lovers is a great segue to Josué's next article in this kind of Middle East section, Are Germany and Israel Truly Friends? Where this has been one of the fascinating dynamics to watch, where since this article was written, since the trumpet went to print, one of the biggest stories on the Middle East has been all of these countries coming out and recognizing a Palestinian state, or saying that they're going to recognize a Palestinian state at the UN General Assembly meeting in September. So France kind of took the lead. They did it once. They said they were going to do this a few months ago. Nobody really followed them. They did it now. Other countries have jumped in. Britain said, yes, we will recognize a Palestinian state if there's not a ceasefire, which, like we talked about on the Week in Review show, is just an absurd statement, because you're saying, Hamas, keep the hostages and then we will give you what you want. Canada said, we're going to recognize a Palestinian state as long as the Palestinian Authority commits to hold elections. They're not going to wait to see if they actually follow through with that commitment, which is pretty dumb, because Canada, because the Palestinian Authority always commits to hold elections and never actually does it. But one country that's not on that list is Germany. And that's not to say that German everything is, well, that's kind of what this article goes into. Everything isn't hunky-dory between Israel and Germany, but Germany does start to look like the lesser of all the evils when you have all these other countries doing this. And then even under Donald Trump, they've done some things that's supportive of Israel. Steve Witkoff, though, you know, he's pushed Israel into some pretty disadvantageous ceasefires. So this is, and then also with America, you've got Israel's looking at this. They're seeing, okay, Donald Trump, certainly the first term, very positive for us, but the Democrats are becoming actively hostile to Israel. And again, you know, if you're Israel, you kind of got to assume Republicans, Democrats, you're going to have a Democratic president 50% of the time. Can we build our security around depending on this pendulum that keeps swinging between a guy that loves us and a guy that hates us? And you go to Germany and it's not like that. This the kind of the words about, well, you know, protecting Israel is a core reason of the German state. Both major parties agree with that. Germany is increasingly looking like Israel's most reliable ally. And so what Josué asks in that question, well, what he does in that question is he looks deeper on this article, is he looks deeper than that surface view.
Right. I think you've encapsulated the situation for Israel pretty well, where even America, you know, the United States has been its protector for a long time. Israelis have to kind of sit on the edge of their seats every time America has an election, and it wildly, you know, gyrates between Donald Trump And, you know, Barack Obama and Joe Biden. And then yet within, you know, when Biden was in power, America did get still give some weapons to Israel, but it condemned Israel, you know, and then President Trump comes back in. It seems like it's a big relief. But then he and Witkoff really, as Mr. Floyd has said, have betrayed Israel on several occasions, and yet, you know, helped with the B-2 bombers striking the Iranian nuclear facilities. So it's just, I mean, just makes the United States a big question mark to the Israelis as far as being its protector, helping it survive, because Israel every day has survival as a state in the balance, and possibly survival of the race to some degree, of Jewish people in the balance. And so it's not just a side issue for them, obviously. And then Germany, in this article, this really shows both sides as well, where there's, you know, Germany. Well, we'll remember that Germany speaking up appears to be the main thing that kept Hezbollah from joining in on the October 7th massacre. We've highlighted that in the trumpet. So Germany did supported Israel in an important way there, for sure. But then this article also shows that they've had plenty of criticism for the Israelis trying to tamp down, not even eliminate, but just kind of tamp down the threat from Gaza, Hamas in Gaza. And then the thing that kind of stood out to me was the poll, which I don't know how many people were polled, but the poll that Josue cites basically says that 4 in 10 Germans believe the Jews are the modern Nazis in terms of what they're doing in Gaza, or to the Palestinians generally. So, so that's kind of, you know, the leadership can say one thing or another, but it's interesting that he brings out what the average German, according to that poll, thinks. And so Germany's relationship with Israel is something we've watched very closely for a long time, and we've made some bold predictions. We're still making the same bold predictions based on what Mr. Fleury has said about that relationship. And so Josue, I think, shows how and why at this stage in history, the one trend gives Israel, as you say, a lot of reason to look for somebody who's just somewhat stable as a powerful ally, but then also at the same time the reasons for the Israelis should distrust Germany, but the Israelis are going to ignore the latter and sort of myopically focus on the former.
And a lot of these same points tie into the points that Joshua made in the previous article as well about Britain, America, Judah, you know, the Jews, Israel, and the Middle East trusting in lovers and then being kind of blindsided by that betrayal. And you see kind of Israel building to that, where there is a sense that we can trust Germany because they, you know, their responsibility for the Holocaust, and they're still trying to make up for that, and we can depend on them more than we can for other countries. And it's just it's a flip of learning from history. It's kind of learning the opposite lesson from history. I mean, that's a point Joshua makes in this article too. That is going to come back and really bite them. But also, I mean, another story, this is a story that has not gained much attention because we all kind of trust Germany. And that's kind of finishing our Middle East set and getting into the second half of the magazine, Mr. Fleury's next article, Lithuania in Prophecy, where you have a massive milestone where you have 1945, and after 1945, there's the famous statement at Yalta, Germany, we're going to destroy German militarism for all time, no German arms industry, no German army, nothing. And then you've had this step-by-step process where restriction by restriction has very gradually been lifted. So you have no army for quite a while, and then it's like, yeah, okay, but what if the Soviet Union invades West Germany? We need, it would be really useful to have some local armed forces. So it's kind of like, okay, well, Germany can have an army, but only for defending German territory. It can't go abroad. It's illegal for it to go abroad. We'll put that in the Constitution. And it can only act in defense. We'll put that in the Constitution. And then you go forward quite a few years, and America quite likes the idea of having German troops helping them abroad. So you start to have German troops operating abroad, particularly in the Balkans and Yugoslavia. The idea of the military can only be used for self-defense, this idea of self, is widened to include allies. So Germany can defend allies, which, given that, I don't know if there's ever really been a war fought where a party has zero allies, basically eliminates that restriction. You can, if that's the bar, you can always find a reason to fight. One of the final remaining restrictions was no permanent overseas military bases. Like, this is still a very much home-based army. Okay, we'll go out and be a part of UN peacekeeping missions and things, but this is still just about the minimum Germany needs to defend the homeland. Now, Germany has built its first permanent military base abroad in Lithuania. So that's significant from the fall of that taboo, but also this is now Europe looking to Germany in the same way that Europe used to look to the United States, where America sets up what's called tripwires in Eastern Europe. You have an American military base in Poland. The personnel on that base are not sufficient to keep the Russians out, but there's enough of them that Russia cannot attack Poland without also attacking some US soldiers, kind of almost guaranteeing that America enters the war. And now you're seeing Germany start to play this role, and Germany setting up tripwires in Eastern Europe. And it's all of Europe starting to look more and more to Germany, not just as the leader. I mean, they've been the leader politically, economically for a long, long time. Until fairly recently, maybe the last 5 years or so, France has been the biggest military spender and kind of the military leader. Now Germany is the military leader as well.
Right. The main impetus for this article being, of course, as you're referring to, the Germans setting up a permanent base of 5,000 soldiers in Lithuania. And it's significant for all the reasons that you're mentioning. And this is a Mr. Gerald Flurry byline. This came from a Key of David that, as you say, it's kind of interesting, like, oh, Lithuania, what, you know, I think it was Lithuanian Prophecy was the name of the program as well. So you don't hear much about that, but he just draws and drew it major attention to that deployment, to that permanent base, because we know that we have to watch German military expansion like a hawk. America and the Allies, Britain, used to know that as well, but a lifetime has passed since that last war, and you know, President Trump himself is wanting Europe and Germany to take more of the responsibility and the payments, the costs, paying the cost of defense for Europe, and so there's all these reasons we think to trust the Germans, like you said, like the Israelis have reason to trust Germany, and it basically just turns the page. We're turning the page on World War II. It's a new world. It's a new Germany. You know, a lifetime's passed since Germany launched its second world war, and we just have almost consciously decided to forget, almost consciously decided to turn the page, take the risk, and it's just a sign of things to come. But I was thinking, as you were talking there, like, what would really finally catch people's attention? You know, Lithuania, perhaps, but somewhat by design, hasn't caught people's attention to say, wait, what are the Germans up to? You know, would it be like, oh, the Germans have a aircraft carrier strike group now, you know, or the Germans have nuclear weapons of their own now, or something, you know, this is one of those kinds of milestones, is my point. And Mr. Flurry really does a great job of drawing everyone's attention to it because everyone is not paying attention to it.
And I think this continues to tie into some of the points from the earlier article. One of the sections that Mr. Flurry has in here talks about Lithuania's history of the Holocaust. And that wasn't discussed at all. One of the big impetuses for Mr. Flurry writing this article was Chancellor Merz visiting Lithuania for this kind of big official ceremony inaugurating, I think it was the 45th German Armored Brigade there. And they talked about, well, he talked about Germany's history of oppressing Lithuania. Nobody talked about Germany and Lithuania's history of oppressing the Jews. And the Holocaust was particularly, I mean, it was terrible everywhere, but in Lithuania, 90% of the Jewish population was killed. And a lot of Lithuanians collaborated in that. The Lithuanian church collaborated with the Nazis. There were clergy that supported or participated in this. There wasn't really any self-reflection. There wasn't any talk of this history at all, of, well, what happened last time Germany and Lithuania kind of got together. And I think, you know, with Eastern Europe, there absolutely is a kind of a, and the enemy of my enemy is my friend. I feel like we can't be too harsh on nations, especially like Finland, where they're being attacked by the Soviet Union. They're being oppressed by the Soviet Union. It is kind of understandable that they reach for help from Germany to wade that off. In the same way that we, Britain and America, got help from the Soviet Union, another deeply evil regime, to defeat the Nazis. But doing that doesn't mean enthusiastic collaboration with the Holocaust. And even Finland is a great example of that, where they allied with Germany to defeat the Soviet Union, but didn't participate and didn't allow any kind of Holocaust on their territory or you know, did a lot to limit that. So there's no contrition there. And that's something that Mr. Flurry really draws attention to. And then all of this, of course, is in the background of Germany being encouraged to rearm. And he goes through a lot of that history, too. The way that that America is actively enabling and pushing Germany to be a major military spender, you know, spending 3.5% of their economy on defense, 1.5% on infrastructure, defense-related infrastructure, which part of that is stuff they'll build anyway, but it's all shaping it in a direction that's going to make it easier for Germany to have more overseas military bases. So they have the rail links with foreign countries so that they can supply these bases and all of that. So, you know, again, this is a, there's a warning message about Germany here, but it also gets back to some of the points we made at the start with Israel's rising lion, where Mr. Flurry concludes we could prevent that, you know, what's coming, if we would look to God and repent of our sins. That is what we must do. We all need to repent. We are all sinners, and we need God to help us, or we need the Lion of the Tribe of Judah to help us. He could so easily stop this. We must bring God into our lives. So that's an important context to conclude this with as well.
Right, absolutely. And I was going to mention just, yeah, that putting that in the larger context, you know, first military base, you know, as you said, no mention of what happened between Germany and Lithuania, you know, not that long ago. And then just the spending, the legal I don't know if legal is the right word, but the diplomatic and legal maneuverings with the Constitution and with NATO and everything to clear the way for Germany to assume a much more powerful role. And as you've covered really well, an independent role from the United States. I mean, I think so much of American foreign policy toward Germany has, for a lot of reasons, tried to make it so that Germany can maybe pay for certain things or take certain burdens off of America, but not act totally independently of NATO and the United States. You know, things like, and these are still in the future, but, you know, airlift capacity and obviously carriers and, you know, things like that. We've wanted to keep them still dependent on NATO for, especially for a major conflict with Russia. You know, still dependent on the United States, but, and they're still small in some ways, but we've got to watch how Germany is doing these things and loosening those links and those dependencies on the United States. And we would not be looking for that we would not be highlighting that. We would not be focusing on what we're focusing in on and ignoring other things if it wasn't for Bible prophecy saying what the Assyrian, the German, is going to do in the future. So obviously Bible prophecy guys, Mr. Flurry, and that's what brings Lithuania to the fore in his mind and in this article.
Well, the next two articles are kind of based off of Trumpet World interviews. So you can go back and actually listen to the show itself. The first is by Mihailo Zekic on the EU's first dictator, where he had a conversation with a man who used to be kind of a supporter or colleague of Viktor Orban and has now become a major critic. And he talks about the various different ways that Orban is clamping down on Europeans or on Hungarian free speech, the way that it's very hard even to interview people. There's a new law that means that a local teacher could get into trouble if he says the wrong thing or even talks to a journalist, or a local priest can get into trouble. And the different ways that he's clamping down on what the press can say, what they're allowed to publish, press ownership. And it's a powerful warning of how a European country can become dictatorial very quickly. And you then pair that with what's happening in Germany and the rise of these military power. It shows how Europe's character can change fast.
Right. Absolutely. And the prophecy that guides that is this prophecy of 10 kings. We talk a lot about Germany and the King of the North. That block, that King of the North, the power of modern Europe, also includes 10 kings. And so this is just a really, I think this is, I mean, for a one page article, this is a great sort of highlighting of what you said, that a modern, European nation can become very king-like, dictatorial, pretty quickly. And will that happen in other nations? And then if you can become a king over a nation, what would it happen if 10 of those gave their power, their ability to control their nation and move it in a certain direction with power and force and rapidity to an overarching king? I mean, Europe could become a superpower very, very quickly. And again, independent, quite independent of the United States, and even belligerent toward the United States. So this is a good example of that, the 10 kings prophecy.
And then this next article by Jeremiah Jacques and Mihailo Zekic, and that I think is based, a lot of it is based off of a Trumpet World interview with the Ukrainian Child Rights Network on just a tragic story of the way that Russia has been trying to kidnap Ukrainian children to turn them into Russian children, and that Russia has a declining population, and this is a particularly horrific way of trying to solve, quote unquote, that problem. I mean, Jeremiah had a fantastic article in the Trumpet before about demographic decline and all of the ways that can harm an economy, and even that's a symptom of spiritual sickness. And you have Russia struggling from that, and this is just a horrific and truly evil way of trying to solve that.
Yeah, I mean, we look at the history books and we see the horrible things, and I don't know, I mean, the Holocaust being the prime example, Nanking, or just these infamous words from the past. And we just think, what was the rest of the world doing? We've talked before about how, the United States turned away a ship, maybe probably more than one, certainly more than just that ship, but of people fleeing, literally fleeing the Holocaust, right? This is that scale of thing. I'm not the Holocaust, but like this is going to live in infamy, that Russia did mass kidnappings of children, mass really brainwashing of children. And we, watched it. There were news reports about it. But the overall feeling in the rest of the world was, oh, that's interesting and sad news. we didn't stop it. We didn't say, this is, we're drawing a line and we can't let a man do such evil things. So I think this is the one, this is the article where, or maybe it was a previous one, but it was by Jeremiah, where he talks about Chechnya. And I mean, we're old enough to remember when Russia was just smashing Chechnya and the Chechens, and just more mortal enemies is an understatement. And now you have Chechens, even this the leader of the Chechens, whose comrades were killed by Russians, who was killing Russians, who's now fighting for Putin, and just that's a perfect example of how the brainwashing works. the you know, taking over people and subliminating them into your way at works. And at this point, you have Chechens going in and doing the dirty work for the nation, the regime that had formerly been smashing them to bits. So it's just this is just another red flag of the moral state of the world. Like the fact that we have let October 7th fade in our memory so fast, the fact that we're letting this ongoing thing happen, and we're not just absolutely characterizing Putin as one of the great villains of this time, who must be stopped and must be opposed, and the satanic kind of things that he's doing must stop one way or the other, but we're managing it, we're tolerating it, and we're getting comfortable with it rather than rising up against it.
And that is, you know, that ultimately a sign that Jesus Christ is going to step in very soon and stop all of this evil. I mean, this is, the Bible talks about transgressions coming to the full. And you see, I mean, the way mankind is getting worse and worse, and like, if there was no intervention, if there, like, where would we be in another generation? I mean, we wouldn't be here in another generation. It's spinning out of control that fast. And so, right, you know, that's a big part of the warning message, but that's a big part of the hope as well, that right, these kind of, this is not going to be allowed to continue indefinitely. And the next story is about a great evil within the United States, one that half the country is kind of convinced the evil is on the other side. That is, on the LA riots are a foreign invasion, where here Mr. Stephen Flurry and Andrew Miller go through some of the statistics, facts about the consequences of the massive illegal immigration that's been coming into the United States, what that has caused. Yet in this circumstance, it's the people that are dealing with the problem are kind of being accused of being the new Nazis and clamping down on this. But so much of, and that's why this is an important story, so much of the evil done by the foreign invasion, done by this this rampant migration, that isn't discussed because the media has a direct agenda here, and they want to kind of, that's not the story they want to tell. They want to tell the story of evil Nazi immigration officials and ICE clamping down on helpless migrants. And that's, you know, that suits their political biases to tell that story. So this gets to a truth that just is being reported far, far too little in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is another example. This is a really strong example of how to think about warfare today. You might think of, as many of us do, main battle tanks, carrier strike groups, ICBMs, and that's what's going to determine the next really major conflict. But like we were saying about the new generation of weapons, you know, AI and drones and so forth, and infiltration, that we are always at war. We're always at war, and our enemies are always trying to avoid being targeted by our strengths and to attack our weaknesses. And like you said before, the porous border and just the open nature of Western society generally makes it a target-rich environment, as they say, for terrorism, for destabilization, for things like this that foreign adversaries will absolutely want to throw fuel on the fire, will absolutely want to exacerbate factionalism in this country. And they are doing that. That is happening. And Andrew Miller talks about how the waving of a Mexican flag, you know, in America, these waving of Mexican flags is really a kind of a clue as to what's happening here, that we have our problems and our sins that have led to these divisions and these problems within the United States. We have not overcome them. We have not turned to God for help on those things and obeyed him in trying to overcome those problems. And so they're growing worse. Foreign adversaries are definitely going to take advantage of that. And they are taking advantage of that. And we're seeing that in our streets. We're seeing things that we have not seen before like this. Not ever, but we're seeing these things worsen and then, you know, like you mentioned before, you know, they sound the alarm, but no one goes to war. When you have a society that's this divided, this violently divided against itself in the streets of LA, in the streets of other cities in this country. And some of those types of people are in the military even, police and so forth, and you don't have a strong thing to fight for. You don't have a unified society that's fighting for something, anything. It's divided against itself. Then you absolutely see how not plausible but inevitable some of these Bible prophecies are.
And really the scale of this story and the Bible prophecy, I mean, and the Bible prophecy is even rarer, but you don't get those in many other places. And I will just put in a plug for a future show where we are working on arranging an interview with a retired U.S. Border Patrol supervisory agent. He's just got a new book out, and you know, we'd like to be able to bring you kind of a bit of an inside look as to what is happening on the U.S. border and with migration. So if all works out well, not all the interviews that we try to work out end up panning out and scheduling and things like that, so I won't give his name yet, but if all works out well, we should hopefully have that for you within the next couple of weeks. The next article, well, that's one of mine, Throwing Away the Keys. Maybe I'll just skip over that one fairly quickly, because I've talked about this a fair bit on this show, where Britain has been making these just astonishingly dumb decisions, like paying Mauritius to take the Diego Garcia military base, despite them having no historical connection to this. I think it was in there I said it'd be like America giving Hawaii to the Philippines on the basis that they're in the same ocean. It's mad. It's just incredibly foolish and frustrating decision making from the British government. But, you know, I think perhaps we can finish with just the commentary, the principles of living, these two pieces right at the end. And I think, you know, these tie in with a core practical point that we've been talking about right from the first article. And those are Why Pray, and then Mr. Hilliker's article In a War Zone, Flashes of Hope, where we've been talking about, well, you know, what we're looking at is the consequences of sin. God is going to confront sin in the world. We need to confront sin in our own lives. That is hard. Well, you need, and then we've talked about, well, you need a connection with the Lion of Judah. You need help from God. Well, why pray? That's one of the answers to that question. And that has a lot of practical points on how to make that connection. And then Flashes of Hope, you know, there are a lot of grim stories in, you know, Russia kidnapping children and brainwashing them to be Russians. These are grim stories, but there's an incredible hope that Jesus Christ is about to return. Yes, but in many ways, he's building the new society. Well, he really is building the new society within his church now. And you can see what that new society is going to look like. It's a new civilization. And there's a wonderful message of hope going out there too.
Right. I like the way that you've described that in these two articles, because they are not so separate from the rest of the issue as they might seem. As you've been saying, and as I've been saying, like the moral force to unite a country to fight a world war, the cohesion, you might call it, of a society to withstand a riot or an injustice, rather than it exploding and amplifying and dividing and weakening the country or the society. All these types of things, you wonder, why don't we have the strength we need? Why don't we have the unity we need? Why are we giving away, paying other countries to take our important, military and strategic assets? Why are we making the decisions we're making? Why are we choosing the allies we're choosing? It is a directly related, it is causation. It's a matter of cause and effect, that it's because of our relationship with our God and with our prayer to our God, with our obedience to our God. That's what we skipped over, but there's a good advertisement for the United States and Britain in Prophecy by Herbert W. Armstrong that ties those things together. Open the Bible, flip around the history of Israel, which is our ancestors, our forefathers, and look at the direct relationship between prayer and national security. Right? It's less to do with billions in budgeting and technological innovations and alliances and partnerships, and getting them to not betray you before you betray them. Like this web of trusting in. I mean, they were doing it back then. They're trusting the Egyptians, or the Syrians or whatever back then as well. And those lessons are, those histories, those facts are recorded for a reason. And so prayer and religion, quote unquote, that's not, I mean, it's not religion. It's actual reality that there's a creator God, that he's still working in on this earth, that there is a struggle against evil going on, and that we ourselves, as you've said several times, have to be fighting, rising up in our own lives to fight the evil in our own selves, our own families, for the sake of ourselves and our families. And so how to pray is not so ancillary as you might think. And I remember when that book came out, it made some waves. I mean, a lot of people were requesting. I don't have figures and numbers as to whether it was the most requested book over a certain period, but I just remember it stood out, and compared to the others, in terms of people just really requesting it a lot when it first came out, how to pray. And if you want to know how to pray and what the Bible says and what you can really rely on from the Bible in terms of your prayers being heard and answered, then that's get that book. It starts from zero. Like you don't have to be, if you know nothing about prayer and nothing about the Bible, that book is a great starting point.
It really is, and that's, I think, a great place to end this show. But that is one of our most basic practical books, and I think just one that very often we end up recommending to new contacts as one of the first things to study, because prayer is so important. And you're right, like, well, how do I do that? I mean, if you have that question, you are far from alone. Sometimes I think that's, when we're talking about prayer on this show, I think it can almost, like, you feel like, oh, well, all of these, like, it comes easy to everybody, but not to me.
Right.
And that is not true. And and that book just is there to really help you build a relationship with God. And so that book you can get on our website, thetrumpet.com. All of our books and booklets, we've got them up there. You can go, you can read it, you can download the PDF or the e-reader. You can order your own free print copy. so that you can, I mean, especially for this book, you can take it, you can mark it up, you can take it with you when you pray and have that like, oh yeah, I want to remember to pray about this or in this way, or there was a point in there I wanted to apply. You know, you have a physical copy, it makes it very easy to do that and use it as an aid to prayer. So I'd really encourage you to get that on there. And then of course, our magazine, The Trumpet Print, or the Trumpet Print Edition, you know, you can read that, you can download the PDF, but also you can sign up for that. So you get your print copy through your mailbox 10 times a year and have all of these articles while they're hot off the press. And again, that's all free. All of this, we're just very happy to send those out to you. And there's no follow-up beyond, you know, confirming you want to keep renewing your subscription. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Philip. And thank you so much to all of you viewers. Thank you to George Haddad for engineering and production. We will be back with our regular Week in Review show on Friday. Until then, keep watching your world.